All right, everyone. Welcome to today's deep dive. And we're going to be looking at marketing mix modeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know that thing where, you know, companies are trying to figure out, you know, which marketing activities are actually giving them results.
Right.
But we're not just talking basic stuff here. Yeah. We are going like deep, deep into the data science trenches.
Absolutely.
And we're talking about a technique called radial basis functions, or RBFs.
RBFs.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. So what's really interesting about this is that, you know, marketing mix modeling really often struggles with trying to capture seasonality.
Right.
You know, that like ebb and flow of things like how consumer behavior changes throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, traditionally the approach has been to sort of treat each month as a separate entity, you know.
Right.
Almost like an on or off switch.
Or like a dummy variable.
Exactly, like a dummy variable, yeah.
Yeah.
But this new research suggests that there's actually a much more elegant way to model these trends.
Okay.
And we can use RBFs for that.
So instead of just saying, like, February is just different.
Right.
We can actually model, like, how that February dip kind of unfolds over time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe it starts in January.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it lingers into March.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And this paper, RBF is all we need for incorporating seasonality in MMM models from Arema Labs.
Okay.
They'll really put this idea to the test.
Okay, cool. So what did they do?
Well, they focused on two key seasonal effects.
Okay.
A dip in February and a peak in December.
Okay. Makes sense.
And the results are actually pretty compelling.
Oh, really?
Yeah. By using RBFs, they saw significant improvements in the model's ability to actually predict sales.
Wow.
Especially in February.
Wait, so they actually saw like real world impact on predictions.
Yeah.
That's what I want to hear.
That's the goal, right?
Not just like theoretical mumbo jumbo, but something marketers can actually use.
Exactly.
So what kind of improvements are we talking about?
So, their R-squared value, which measures how well the model fits the data,
went up by a couple of percentage points.
Okay.
Which, you know, it might not sound like a lot, but in the world of statistical modeling, that's actually a pretty big leap forward.
Okay.
It means that the model is explaining more of the variation in the sales data,
mm-hmm.
thanks to those RBFs.
Okay, so the model fits better.
Right.
But does it actually predict sales more accurately?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, that's what really matters.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
And that's where another metric called KL divergence comes in.
Okay.
And this one measures how closely the model's predictions align with the actual sales data.
Okay.
And in some cases, this metric almost dropped to zero when they use RBFs.
Really?
Which means that the model was getting really, really close to predicting the actual sales figures.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah.
So those February predictions, you know, that was one of their focus areas.
Right.
Did the RBFs actually do a better job there?
Yeah, they did.
Right.
Their MAPE,
yeah.
Which tells you how accurate the predictions are on average.
Dropped significantly in February when using RBFs.
Hmm.
So in some cases, the accuracy improved by a whopping 25%.
What?
Compared to traditional methods.
Wow.
Particularly when they use the triangular kernel.
Hold on, a triangular kernel.
Yeah.
Now we're getting into the nitty-gritty.
Yeah.
I know we talked about kernels before,
mm-hmm.
you know, shaping those RBF curves.
Right.
But why would a triangular one be particularly good for February?
Well, it could be that the triangular kernel's shape, mm-hmm. you know, which is kind of a simple ramp up and down.
Okay.
Just happened to fit the way sales trended in February for this data set.
Okay.
It's a good reminder that even with a sophisticated technique like RBFs,
okay.
we still need to think critically about the specific shape of our data
mm-hmm.
and choose the tools that fit the best.
Okay, so it's not just about like blindly applying a fancy technique.
No.
But understanding what's going on under the hood.
Exactly.
But before we get too deep into the technical weeds here,
sure.
I want to make sure I'm following like the overall logic. Okay.
So we're trying to capture seasonality more accurately.
Right.
And these RBFs are like custom fitted curves
uh-huh.
that do a better job than just treating each month separately.
Yeah.
Is that the gist of it?
You got it.
Okay.
Think of those traditional dummy variables as like blunt instruments,
right.
just turning a month on or off.
Yeah.
But RBFs, on the other hand, are more like sculpting tools.
Okay.
They let you shape those seasonal curves to precisely match how consumer behavior is actually evolving.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
So the paper specifically talks about these kernel functions.
Yes.
As being the things that shape those curves.
Right.
I'm picturing like those Platerdemoles from when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
Yeah.
So each kernel function, like the Gaussian, the Bayway, or the triangular one we just talked about,
yeah.
creates a different shape for the RBF.
Okay.
And it's up to the data scientists to choose the kernel that best reflects the pattern they're trying to capture. So if I'm picturing like a smooth, gradual rise and fall in sales,
mm-hmm.
maybe I'd pick a Gaussian kernel.
Right.
But if it's a more abrupt change, I might go with something like the triangular.
Exactly the idea.
Yeah, it's about matching the tool to the task.
Okay.
And what's fascinating is that in this research, they actually found that the choice of kernel wasn't as important as another factor.
Oh, really?
The bandwidth.
Ah, the bandwidth.
Yeah.
You mentioned that earlier. Mm-hmm. It's like adjusting the radius of influence for each month.
Right.
But why is it so important?
Well, imagine you're trying to capture that December sales peak.
Okay.
The bandwidth determines how far that December effect spreads out to neighboring months.
Okay.
So if it's too narrow, the model might become hyper-focused on December
mm-hmm.
and miss the broader trend.
Right.
But if it's too wide, it might smooth out the peak altogether.
So it's like finding the right zoom level on a map.
Exactly.
Too close, and you miss the context too far out, and you lose the details.
Exactly.
Okay. And the researchers found that fine-tuning this bandwidth was crucial
mm-hmm.
for getting the most accurate and insightful results.
That makes a lot of sense.
Good.
Okay, so we've got our kernels shaping those RBF curves right. and the bandwidth controlling their reach.
Right.
But how do we know these RBF-enhanced models are actually reliable?
Right.
Is there a way to make sure they're not just spitting out random numbers?
That's where model diagnostics come in.
Okay.
Like giving your model a thorough health checkup.
Right.
They ran a battery of statistical tests to make sure the RBF models were statistically sound.
Okay.
Things like the augmented Dickey-Fuller test,
yeah.
the KPSS test, and the Jung box test.
Okay.
All designed to ensure that the model is capturing real patterns, not just statistical flukes.
So it's not enough for the model to just fit the data well.
Yeah.
It also has to pass these statistical sniff tests.
Exactly.
To make sure it's not picking up on like spurious correlations
right.
or violating any key assumptions.
Mm.
That's reassuring.
It is. And in this case, the RBF enhanced models passed all these tests with flying colors.
Nice.
They were not only more accurate,
uh-huh.
but also statistically robust.
This is really exciting stuff.
It is.
It seems like these RBFs have the potential to like really shake up how marketers approach seasonality and make more informed decisions.
Absolutely.
But I'm curious, how does this all translate into actionable insights for someone like running a marketing campaign?
Mm.
Can you give us a concrete example?
Sure. So welcome back, everyone. It's great to be diving back into this world of radial basis functions.
So we've established that these RBFs can be pretty powerful tools, you know, for capturing seasonality
right.
in a much more nuanced way than traditional methods.
Absolutely.
But I still have some questions about those different kernel functions.
Okay.
Can we break those down a little further?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Remember, these kernel functions are the building blocks
mm-hmm.
that give each RBF its unique shape. It's kind of like choosing the right brush stroke for a painting.
Okay.
Each one creates a different effect.
I like that analogy.
Good.
So let's say we're looking at that December sales peak again.
Mm-hmm.
How would the different kernels affect how we model that peak?
Well, if you use a Gaussian kernel,
okay.
you're essentially creating a smooth bell curve around December.
Okay.
So that means that the December effect gradually spreads out to November and January.
Right.
And then tapers off as you get further away.
So it's assuming that the holiday shopping frenzy
right.
has sort of a ripple effect on those surrounding months?
Exactly.
Okay.
But now let's say you think the December peak is really isolated,
mm-hmm.
like a Black Friday sale.
Okay.
That causes a huge short-lived spike.
Right.
In that case, you might want to use a kernel like the Epinechnikov or Biweight.
Okay.
Which creates a more compact curve with a sharper drop-off.
So the Gaussian kernel is like a gentle wave,
mm-hmm.
while the Epinechnikov is more like a sudden splash.
That's a good way to think about it.
What about that triangular kernel
yeah.
that performs so well in February?
Right.
How does that one work?
So the triangular kernel is kind of the most straightforward one.
Okay.
It creates a linear ramp up to the peak and then a linear ramp down.
Okay.
It's like saying sales increase steadily up to December, then decrease steadily afterward.
Interesting. So the choice of kernel really depends on
right.
how we think that seasonal effect unfolds over time.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not just about finding the best kernel overall.
It's not a one size fits all.
Right.
It's about understanding the nuances of your data and choosing the tool that best captures the patterns you see.
Okay. That makes sense.
Good.
So we've got our kernels shaping those RBF curves.
Yeah.
And then we have that bandwidth parameter that controls how far they spread.
Exactly.
You mentioned that finding the right bandwidth is like finding a Goldilocks zone.
Yeah.
Not too narrow, not too wide.
Right.
But how do we actually do that in practice?
Yeah. Good question.
Is it just a matter of trial and error?
Well, thankfully, it's a bit more systematic than just random guessing.
Okay.
One common technique is called cross-validation.
Cross-validation.
Yeah. And it's like running mini experiments within your data.
Okay.
To see which bandwidth performs best.
Oh, I'm intrigued. How does that work?
So let's say you have sales data for 3 years.
Yeah.
You could set aside 1 year as your test data.
Okay.
And use the other 2 years to train your model with different bandwidths.
Mm-hmm.
Then you would see which bandwidth does the best job of predicting sales.
Okay.
For that held out test year.
Ah, so it's like giving the model a practice run.
Yeah.
With different bandwidth settings and seeing which one scores the highest on the real test.
That's a great way to think about it. Yeah.
Cool.
There are other methods too, some based on like statistical properties of the data.
Okay.
But the key is that you're systematically trying out different bandwidths
mm-hmm.
and evaluating their performance.
Right.
It's like fine tuning an instrument until you get that perfect sound.
Now, in this research paper,
they
actually found that getting that bandwidth right was more important than the specific kernel function they used.
Interesting, right.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it speaks to the fact that the extent of that RBF's influence, that neighborhood effect, is really crucial.
Yeah.
If the bandwidth is way off, even the perfectly shaped kernel won't capture the seasonality effectively.
Right.
It's like having a beautifully sharpened knife.
Okay.
But trying to cut a steak with the wrong part of the blade.
Right.
Doesn't matter how sharp it is if you're not using it correctly.
That's a perfect analogy.
Thanks.
So even with these sophisticated tools, the human element of understanding the data and making those judgment calls is still critical.
Absolutely. Data science is about so much more than just blindly applying algorithms.
Right.
It's about understanding the nuances of your data and using your expertise to guide the process.
Something else that really impressed me about this research was their emphasis on model diagnostics. They weren't content with just getting a model that seemed to fit the data.
Right.
They really dug in to ensure it was statistically sound and reliable.
Yeah. You know, we're not aiming for a model that just looks good on paper.
Right.
We want one that reflects the underlying reality of our data.
Right.
And those diagnostic tests help us make sure that's the case.
Okay, remind me about the augmented Dickey Fuller test again.
Yeah, so the ADF test is all about stationarity.
Okay.
Which basically means checking if the data has weird trends that could throw off our analysis.
Okay.
So, for example, if sales are steadily increasing year over year,
right.
That's a trend that needs to be accounted for.
Mm-hmm.
Separately from seasonality.
So the model needs to be able to tell the difference.
Right.
Between a consistent trend and a repeating seasonal pattern.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the ADF test helps us see if our data is stationary.
Mm-hmm.
That is free from those confounding trends.
Okay. And then we have the KPSS test.
Right.
Which also looks at stationarity, but from a different statistical angle.
Exactly. It's like double checking our work.
And what about the Jungbox test?
The Jungbox.
That one always sounds a bit intimidating.
Yeah, it's not as scary as it sounds.
Okay.
The Jungbox test is checking for autocorrelation in the model's errors.
Okay.
And autocorrelation means that there's some kind of pattern or relationship between the errors over time.
So like if the model consistently underestimates sales in January.
Right.
And overestimates in February.
Exactly. That would be a sign that the model isn't capturing some underlying factor in the data.
Right.
It might mean we need to revisit our assumptions, try a different kernel, or fine-tune the bandwidth further.
So these diagnostics are like a detective's toolkit?
Yeah.
Helping us spot clues that something might be off with our model?
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
They're essential for ensuring that our model isn't just capitalizing on random noise.
Mm-hmm.
But is truly reflecting the underlying patterns in our data.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in this study, the RBF enhanced models passed all of these tests.
Right.
Which is a strong testament to their reliability.
Now, in the paper, they mentioned that the choice of kernel function didn't seem to make as much of a difference as the bandwidth parameter.
Right.
But they also hinted that there might be situations where one type of kernel is more advantageous.
Yeah.
Can you give us some real-world examples of when that might be the case?
Hmm.
Okay, welcome back to the final part of our deep dive into these radial basis functions.
Uh-huh.
We've talked about how they work, you know, how to fine-tune them,
right,
even how to make sure they're statistically sound.
Absolutely.
But now let's bring it all home.
Right.
How can marketers actually use these RBF-enhanced models,
right,
to improve their strategies?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
And the answer is, it really depends on, you know, the specific goals and challenges that you're facing.
Okay.
But I think one of the most powerful applications is in getting a more accurate picture of how your marketing is really performing.
Okay.
You know, traditional MMM.
Mm.
It can be really hard to separate the impact of your campaigns from natural seasonal trends.
Right.
But RBS allow you to kind of tease those apart more effectively.
So no more taking credit for that December sales spike just because it's the holidays.
Exactly.
You can actually see how much of that lift came from your marketing effort.
Right.
Versus just the natural ebb and flow of consumer behavior.
Exactly. And once you have that clarity, you can make smarter decisions about budget allocation.
Right.
So if you see that a particular campaign is actually driving significant results, even during a traditionally slow month, that's a strong argument for investing more in that strategy.
Makes sense. It's all about getting that return on investment.
Right.
But RBFs aren't just about measuring past performance.
No.
Right? They can also help us predict future trends.
Absolutely.
And make more proactive decisions.
Yeah. Instead of just reacting to seasonal swings as they happen,
right,
you can actually start to anticipate them and adjust your campaigns accordingly.
Okay.
So, for example, imagine you're that coffee chain.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that your February sales dip isn't just a sudden drop.
Yeah.
It's a gradual decline starting in January.
Right.
With that knowledge, you could start ramping up promotions or maybe adjusting your messaging earlier to counteract that trend.
So it's like having a crystal ball.
Yeah.
But instead of vague predictions, you have data-driven insights that you can actually act on.
Exactly. And that's powerful.
That is powerful.
Yeah.
Now, in this research, they highlighted that triangular kernel was particularly effective for predicting February sales.
Right.
Do you think there are other situations where specific kernels might be more advantageous?
Yeah, I think it's definitely worth considering.
Okay.
Remember, the triangular kernel creates a very simple linear shape. So perhaps for this data set, the February sales dip really was that straightforward.
Okay.
A steady decline that a triangular kernel was perfect for capturing.
Okay.
But in other cases, you might have more complex patterns.
Right.
That require a different kernel.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a gradual rise followed by a sharp drop or multiple peaks throughout the year.
Right.
That's where those Gothmann or Bayway kernels could shine.
So it's all about understanding the nuances of your data.
Exactly.
And choosing the right tool for the job.
Yeah. It's like a carpenter who knows when to reach for a hammer versus a screwdriver.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know we've been singing the praises of RBFs.
We have.
But let's play devil's advocate for a moment.
Okay.
Are there any situations where a simpler model might actually be sufficient?
Yeah.
Like, when are RBFs truly worth the effort?
That's a great question. And honestly, it's something that every data scientist should ask themselves before jumping into a complex model.
Right.
If your seasonal patterns are very straightforward and you have a good understanding of the underlying drivers, a simpler model might be perfectly adequate.
Okay.
But if you're dealing with more subtle trends,
yes,
or you need that granular level of precision to make critical decisions,
right,
that's when RBFs can really pay off.
So it's a trade-off between complexity and accuracy.
Right.
Sometimes a simpler model is good enough, but for those high-stake situations where you really need to like squeeze every last bit of insight out of your data,
right,
that's where RBFs can be a game changer.
Exactly.
But even with the right model,
Yeah.
You know, getting those insights requires more than just crunching numbers.
Absolutely.
The researchers in this study were very deliberate about choosing which variables to include.
Mm-hmm.
They used a combination of statistical analysis and domain expertise.
Right.
Why is that so important?
Yeah, that's a crucial point.
Yeah.
It's tempting to just throw every variable you can think of into the model.
Right.
And hope for the best. But that can actually lead to a lot of noise and make it harder to extract meaningful insights.
Right.
It's like trying to listen to a symphony with a dozen different instruments playing random notes at the same time.
Right.
You can't appreciate the individual melodies or the overall composition.
Right. You need that conductor, that guiding hand.
Exactly.
To select the right instruments and create a harmonious sound.
That's where domain expertise comes in.
Okay.
It's about understanding the business context, knowing which factors are likely to be influential, and using that knowledge to guide the variable selection process.
Okay.
It's the art of asking the right questions and focusing the model on the relationships that matter most.
This has been incredibly insightful.
Good. I'm glad.
It's clear that RBFs have the potential to revolutionize how marketers approach seasonality.
I think so, too.
But how do you see these advanced modeling techniques changing the marketing landscape more broadly?
Well, I think we're just at the beginning of a really exciting journey.
Yeah.
As data becomes even more abundant and tools become more sophisticated,
mm-hmm.
we'll see marketers gaining a level of understanding that was previously unimaginable.
Right.
You know, it's not just about knowing that people buy more coffee in December.
Right.
It's about understanding the intricate web of factors that drive those purchasing decisions.
So it's moving from broad generalizations to like a truly granular understanding of individual consumer behavior.
Exactly.
Wow.
Imagine being able to predict not just what people will buy,
mm-hmm.
but when, where, and why. That's the power of data science.
Now, all of this sounds incredibly complex.
It is complex, yeah.
I can already hear some marketers saying, like, great RBFs sound awesome, but I don't have a team of data scientists at my disposal.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to those who are eager to embrace these techniques,
yeah.
but might not have that in-house expertise?
It's a valid concern.
Yeah.
And it's true that implementing these models effectively does require specialized knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is things are changing rapidly. There are some amazing software tools and platforms emerging
yeah.
that are making these techniques much more accessible,
yeah.
even for marketers without a deep technical background.
So it's becoming more like using a powerful spreadsheet.
That's a good way to put it.
Than writing complex code from scratch.
Yeah, and there's always the option of partnering with consulting firms or agencies
right.
that specialize in this area.
Mm-hmm.
The key is to be curious. To be willing to learn and experiment.
Right.
And to not be intimidated by the technical side of things.
Yeah.
The rewards are definitely worth the effort.
This deep dive has been incredibly enlightening.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
I feel like I've not only gained a deeper understanding of RBFs,
mm-hmm.
but also like a renewed appreciation for the power of data science to transform marketing.
I couldn't agree more. And as a final thought for our listeners,
all right.
remember that this is just one technique in a vast and ever-evolving field.
Right.
There's a whole world of fascinating tools and methods out there waiting to be explored.
Yeah.
So stay curious, keep learning, and never stop pushing the boundaries of what's possible.
Beautifully said. A huge thanks to our expert for sharing your knowledge and insights with us today.
It was my pleasure.
And to all our listeners, we hope this deep dive has inspired you to unlock that hidden potential in your data.
Absolutely.
Until next time, keep exploring and keep diving deep.
Take care, everyone.